episode 148. Just for the record, Lindsay Lohan and I are talking.
Well, g'day world, it's the Cam, it's the 11th of August 2006, and I've got a couple of interviews coming up today. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, I've got an interview with the head geek from B5 Media, the blogging dynamo organisation run by a handful of Aussies and a Canadian, B5 Media. That's Aaron Brazell coming up to talk about the latest trends in blog architecture that he's been pushing the boundaries on. But right now on the show, I'm very pleased to have with me John Karantzis, the big dog, the boss at a company that's shaking up the television market in Australia, Real Time. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, mate, you had a big announcement this week about a deal with Yahoo 7, and I want to get into that in a second, but as I mentioned to you just before the show, I was listening last night to an interview that you did with my mate Mike Walsh up at the Fourth Estate Conference in Sydney back in, I think, February. And you made an interesting comment during the show when he was talking about Real Time versus Big Pond Movies, and you were talking about how Real Time's all built around a set-top box, and, you know, you thought most people didn't want to download and watch stuff on a PC, they wanted to watch it on a TV. Obviously, you've changed your mind.
Well, I think the actual market and the environment has changed our mind a little bit on that. We're now looking to support both modes of content delivery. We see that new devices that are coming on the market, things like the Vive, as well as the flexibility now of being able to connect your PC reliably to a TV, it's becoming a lot more mainstream and a lot more mass market. And certainly back when I was speaking to Mike Walsh, we hadn't contemplated that we'd have a mass market partner like Yahoo 7 promoting the service for us. So I think really it's about the fact that both real-time's opportunities have changed, as well as the fact that technology in the market has moved on in 6 months, and there's a lot more out there that can be taken advantage of.
Well, man, I think it does you credit. You're obviously an organisation that's nimble enough to move on its feet, and you know, some organisations set their business plan in stone, and obviously technology, particularly in the media space, is changing fairly rapidly at the moment. So why don't you take the audience a little bit through the announcement. As I understand it, you're going to be starting to roll this service out in the next couple of weeks, and you're going to be making a whole bunch of programming, both television and films, available for download and purchase, obviously, via the Yahoo 7 site?
Yes, that's right. The wonderful thing about working with Yahoo 7 is just the sheer, I suppose, scale of it and the access to the market. Yahoo at the moment is it's probably one of Australia's most popular sites, with about 5.6 million unique visits a month. But what's exciting about it is our ability to work with an international company that's got a similar vision to ourselves and recognises what we've done as, you know, as a startup, as a small company, in aggregating both movies and TV, and the sort of assistance that we can get to getting this out to the mass market. Now, in terms of our programming, we're already excited about the fact that, you know, we've got 20th Century Fox and Universal and Sony and MGM, you know, as part of our major studio partnerships. And certainly we're excited that we're offering both feature length and TV episodes. But what I can't do at the moment is release our lineup until the launch.
And what about pricing?
Pricing is actually on our website at realtime.tv. But prices start from as low as a dollar, for, I suppose, niche type content. TV episodes are starting from around $3. Library movies from around $4. And current features, you know, new release movies from around $6.
Now, people will pay the money online via a credit card?
That's one option. And we'll be introducing a BPay with a virtual wallet very shortly as well.
What about PayPal, Google Wallet, any of those sorts of forms of payment as well?
We are looking at those at the moment. Obviously, credit card is a fairly straightforward method to get up for us initially. And we're looking at what the popular methods are and certainly be adding them onto the service. And we're also looking at the prepay electronic over-the-counter vouchers, similar to what you see with mobile phones.
And then once people have handed over the DOSH, they'll be able to download the film or the television program onto their PC.
Correct. Now, with the download, your rental period actually starts from when you first commence playing out your program. So you could conceivably download, a movie or a TV episode, keep it on your PC for 30 days in the case of a movie, or up to 60 days in the case of TV episodes, and start your 24-hour rental anytime that suits yourself.
And you have your own sort of player that they'll be playing it back on, I imagine, to manage DRM issues?
We actually do. We've got a full environment that's DRM managed. With the Yahoo arrangement, it actually comes out of the internet domain, which is where Yahoo sits, into a private secure network domain, which is where real-time serves its content from. So whilst our player looks a lot like a browser, it's actually a DRM environment, not too dissimilar to, say, Apple's environment with their iTunes.
And what are some of the stipulations around the DRM? People, it obviously has a self-destruct mechanism built into it. I'm assuming people aren't able to burn it onto CDs or DVDs or anything like that. Do they have to? Can they only watch it on the PC that it's downloaded on? Can they move it to a different machine in the house? Like, could I download it on my PC, move it down to my Xbox across my wireless network and play it back on my TV?
No, and it probably won't make toast either, but let me just clarify what we do too. The initial model we're going out with is a rental model. So you download to PC or your set-top box, whichever way you want to go, and you've got 24-hour access from when you commence play. Now, our second model is download to own, which is actually a separate part of the question you've just asked me. We'll be looking to release that in the next 3 months, and that is a case where you can actually download it to your PC, transfer it to a portable device, and either burn it to a DVD or we send you a hard copy DVD in the mail, depending upon your preference. Now, the hard copy DVD in the mail is sort of a transition sequence that we'll be going through for the first 6 to 12 months, just to let subscribers get used to the fact that, it's electronic delivery for download to own. And that process is very separate from our rental process.
How big do you expect these shows to be? I mean, how big is a 2.5-hour movie going to be if I download it from Yahoo 7 or Real Time?
Well, I haven't got a number for a 2.5-hour movie off the top of my head, but a 90-minute movie is around 650 megabits. Now, you can prorata that for a half-hour TV show or for a two-and-a-half-hour movie. But ideally, we've been looking on a DSL2 network. We see that a full feature-length movie comes down in less than 10 minutes. And on a DSL network, which is conventionally where most of Australia is sitting at the moment, we see that in metro areas it's roughly 2 hours, and the worst we would expect to see in regional areas is 8 to 10 if you're really out there with a slow connection.
And what kind of download management tools do you have? I'd hate to get 599 meg through my download only to have my wireless connection or my ISP to drop out and have to start all over again.
Yeah, our technology is actually based on technology that's basically 10 years old, would you believe? It's broad satellite broadcast technology, and it uses what we call store forward store, which is the same way that satellites used to transmit data a long time ago. What that is good for is the fact that satellites quite often have breaks in transmission because of weather or whatever the case may be, a truck pulling up in front of the satellite dish.
Yep.
We've adapted this to work over DSL. So that means that irrespective of whether your connection is always on or almost always on or gets a break, it will pick up as a pause and resume.
Yep. Fantastic. Sounds like you've thought of all of the little bugs, man. Now, tell me about the set-top box, because you're still planning on rolling out the set-top boxes, right? I think you're starting a trial with Adam Internet in South Australia soon?
Well, we've actually started commercially in South Australia with Adam Internet.
Oh, fantastic. So, how's it going?
It's going well. The service is available for subscribers to come on, pretty much effective last week. And we're getting a fantastic response. Now, it's probably early days to say what the actual numbers are. I think we'll wait at least a month or two before we start releasing any numbers. But certainly, you know, we're quite excited by both the take up and the amount of downloads and views that our customers are getting.
Now, I picked up from the interview that you did with Mike that you're white labeling the real-time service to these ISPs, so Adam Internet would be delivering this as a service to their customers?
That's right. This is we actually do what's called a white label or a co-brand. What we're finding is that our partners actually want to use our name, so they don't quite want to stand alone with it, because real-time is starting to become synonymous with movie downloads.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually an Adam real-time service, just like it's a Yahoo 7 real-time service.
Mm-hmm.
So you will see elements of the name, but, you know, we tend to take second seat rather than primary position.
Powered by real-time.
Or similar.
Real-time inside. Yeah.
Something like that. Maybe not quite an Intel campaign, but we'll certainly feature the real-time logo on the content program guides.
Now, are you associated with Real Time TV, which is launching operations in the US in September?
No, we're not.
Just a coincidence, huh?
Absolute coincidence.
Who's going to launch the first legal, you know, the cease and desist, you can't use that name lawsuit?
Sorry, I missed that, Cameron.
I was going to say, who's going to launch the first cease and desist lawsuit to stop the other party using the name?
Well, we've trademarked our name, and we've also got the domain .tv. So I suspect that we've been out there a little bit longer, and certainly we've got a greater depth of studios and a deeper business model. So, you know, we'd be happy to talk to the guys in the US and see if we can give them a hand.
Very, very politically put. Now, you've got some pretty big investors, I gather, from the interview again with Mike. Sony Pictures is one of your investors. That's a huge coup.
That's right, yeah. Sony came on board as a cornerstone investor in the early days. Certainly the support from Sony Pictures has been absolutely fantastic, both in terms of, as an investor, but also as a bouncing board in this very new industry. The guys there have been just great to work with and very, very helpful in terms of helping us put a strategy together and business models together.
So, John, how do you see yourselves competing with the likes of Apple and Microsoft? I mean, when I'm talking to people in the TV industry, and coincidentally enough, I've been talking to some people at Channel 7 just in the last couple of weeks about this, and I've been saying, well, look, you know, Desperate Housewives, I'm probably, not that I watch it, but, you know, if I did want to watch it a year or two from now, I'm probably going to just go up to iTunes and buy it and download it and watch it on my iPod or watch it on my TV or whatever. And obviously Microsoft is gearing up to do a similar sort of thing when they launch the Zune in the next couple of months and building their back-end media channel, hopefully getting it right this time. How do you see yourselves competing with these very large global players? I mean, I don't see any real benefit in having an Australian-based operation to download movies and TV from when I can download it from anywhere in the world.
Well, let's just answer that. Firstly, there's a misconception that Hollywood delivers over the internet. Hollywood actually delivers on a territory-by-territory basis. So you actually do need a local operation in each country. Each deal is licensed to that territory because your availability windows and your rights change from country to country.
Yeah, but so, Apple and Microsoft have operations all over the world, right?
They do. What you'll note with Microsoft, it's a bit like saying, well, you know, Microsoft has got a very heavy hand in the internet, but it certainly doesn't produce content for the internet. It's a back-end solution provider. We'd be very happy to work with Microsoft using their technology to deliver the content that we're aggregating. Now, I think it's probably, whilst I understand what you're saying about Apple and Microsoft and their sheer size, the reality is that aggregating video content is a specialist area. It's very different to music, a very different philosophy and rights management area and everything else. And I just don't think that unless Microsoft's prepared to have a bit of a philosophical shift in the way they do business, that they'll be able to go out, aggregate content, and actually operate a successful content business. But certainly they will be able to support content businesses with their technology, which is their core focus. In terms of Apple, we've looked at what they're doing, and to date, whilst they're making a lot of noise, they haven't licensed a lot of content. If you actually do look at the Apple iTunes US site, you'll find that their content offering is significantly lower than what Real Time has for Australia. And I think to date, the first mover advantage and getting out there with a company like Yahoo will certainly give us a good lead in this market.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough too. The other question I had for you around the set-top box is, again, when I've been asked by people to sort of forecast where this stuff's going, I quite often talk about the fact that, well, I'm going to have an Xbox 360 or a PlayStation 3 already in my living room, already connected to broadband, already connected to the TV. You know, these devices, the current generation, all have, at least in the premium versions of them, have media player technology built into them. What do you see as being your direction, set-top boxes versus these sort of gaming devices that most people are already forking out $600 for to put in their living room?
Well, our view is that we're trying to be both network and device agnostic. So if the device complies with the rights management rules and we can securely deliver content to it in accordance with our licensing agreements, then we don't actually have an issue with what the physical device label is, whether it's been provided by one extreme of Philips or a Sanyo as, you know, some sort of DVD come IPTV box, or whether at the other end of the spectrum it's an Xbox or a PlayStation. Certainly our relationship with Sony, I think, will give us a bit of an earlier lead into the PlayStation than it might the Xbox. But having said that, the Xbox runs Microsoft backend, which is a very accessible technology. So we are looking at those, but they're not here right now. But certainly they are on our roadmap.
Hmm. Just one last question. Getting back to the service that you're launching with Yahoo, we were talking about the different devices that you'll be able to play back this content on today and then in the future. Where does the video iPod fit into that range of options? Am I going to be able to buy these movies and TV shows and drop them onto my 60 gig video iPod today, or is that something I'm going to have to wait for?
Well, unfortunately, the video iPod uses Apple's proprietary digital rights management system.
Yeah.
And I think Apple was involved in a French court case recently. I'm not quite sure how that panned out. But the gist of it is that we can't deliver onto the iPod unless Apple makes it available. Now, having said all that, I don't actually believe that the iPod has got the right screen size to be watching much more than a news grab or a quick sports grab, very similar to a mobile phone. The PlayStation Portable, on the other hand, which has got roughly 2.5 times the screen size of the Apple iPod, I think is a far more interesting target device for us, because, you know, there's about 1.2 million of them out there in Australia, but the screen size and the resolution is just far superior to the iPod itself.
And so that means people will be able to drop your stuff onto the PSP or not?
It's certainly something we're looking at, because mm-hmm. the screen size actually lends itself to being able to watch a feature-length or TV episode from it. It's you know, as I say, it's 2.5 times the screen size of the iPod, and you could certainly sit on a train or a bus or somewhere watching a PSP as opposed to squinting at an iPod.
Oh, mate, I think you're being a little bit harsh on the iPod there. I've watched lots of TV on the iPod on planes, mate. And, you know, a video iPod being held 30 centimetres away from your eyes is pretty much the same as having a massive flat-screen plasma on the other side of the living room, as far as I can tell.
Well, mate, I'll take your word for that. But I've also got a video iPod, and it drives me nuts.
You don't like it? All right.
If I'm using a portable device, I'll go to the bigger PSP screen. Thanks.
I'm with you. Big screens is always good, but I don't know that I'd write off the iPod that quickly. John!
iPod's fantastic for music, but thanks, yeah.
John, great to have you on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time. Congratulations on everything you've accomplished. I mean, you guys have certainly shaking up the market from what I can tell. I imagine there's a lot of some of the entrenched companies, like the one that begins with a T and the one that they own that begins with an F, that are all going to be gnashing, much gnashing of the teeth, I'm sure, is going on at the moment. But congratulations to you guys. You've pulled off a major coup with the deal, and look forward to your continued success in the market, John.
Thanks a lot, Cameron, and talk to you again in the future.
Cheers, mate.
Welcome to the first episode of Napoleon 101,
As far as I know, the first Napoleon podcast on the internet.
J. David Markham.
David is the Executive Vice President and Editor-in-Chief of the International Napoleonic Society. The President of the Napoleonic Alliance.
Well, I first got interested in Napoleon when I was a young child, and my father would tell me stories. I mean, I would say Napoleon has love, sex, war, politics, power, and pathos. You know, and he was a genius on top of all that, so what's not to like?
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Podcast Network.com. Welcome, Aaron Brazel. Is that how you pronounce your name? Brazel?
You know, you're one of the few people that actually pronounced it right the first time.
There you go, mate. I have a knack for names. I'm like Kramer. You just tell me your name and I'll figure out how to spell it. Welcome to the show. Now, I don't know your exact title, man, but I'm going to take a punt. You're like the chief technology guru for B5 Media.
That's a pretty good assessment. I don't know if I'd put the chief on there because there's some other good, really quality people there. But yeah, I'm the systems admin. I run everything. I develop the infrastructure and maintain the systems and do some tech support as needed. And so yeah, developer, the whole nine.
And how long have you been with the B5 team?
Started back doing a little bit of freelance development work with them back in November when, if you remember right, about Weblogs merged with B5 Media. I was working with Jeremy and the guys to try to integrate their network into B5. And from there, it just took off. Started a blog with them and just carried on, got more involved. Channel editor for the sports channel, and now I'm doing what I'm doing. I guess I've just sort of grown into it.
Excellent. Is it a full-time gig for you, or do you have a day job as well?
At this point, I have a day job. Who knows how long that's going to last, but right now I have a day job, and I try to keep everything going in my personal time, and there's a lot to keep going. And, you know, it's funny. It's like it's two full-time jobs, my day job and my B5 Media job. They keep me busy.
Yeah. And you're based on the East Coast, New York?
I am. Yeah, not New York. Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area.
Ah, Baltimore.
East Coast still, yeah. Have you ever been there?
I've been through Baltimore, yeah.
Oh, pity you.
No, it's a pretty part of the U.S.
Yeah, I suppose. I lived there most of my life.
Yeah, well, we don't tend to respect places we grew up in. I know that for a fact.
Yeah.
So, man, you've been talking to me on email and IM over the last few weeks about some of the cool stuff that you're doing in terms of blog architecture and how you've been rejigging your own blog. Has that gone live yet, the new architecture?
Yeah, actually, it went live last week or maybe, yeah, it was last week, early last week about we launched it, and it's been a really cool thing. It's been really well received, and it's generating a lot of buzz in the blogosphere. I'm hoping it generates more because that's really the point behind it all. But yeah, it's been received very, very well, and probably one of the most popular launch posts I've ever written ever.
So why don't you take us through the thinking of what you're trying to accomplish with it? Just for people who want to go and have a look while they're listening, it's
sure.
technosailor.com, as in hello sailor, but techno sailor.
Yes, that's...
You still there, Aaron?
Yes, I am.
You just dropped out for a second. You got anything running in the background that could be clogging up your Skype connection?
Don't think so, but I'll close everything down just to make sure. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're fine now, mate. It was just about 2 seconds there. It all went staticky on me.
All right, I'm working to close things down while I'm talking to you. Really what it was is over the past 6 months, I've really realized that, you know, I may not have had always the best content out there, but I've got a lot of it. And over the past, I guess, 6 months or so, it's really improved quite a bit. But the problem with blogs in general is that once the content disappears off the front page, unless a reader comes via a search engine or something, you know, it's just not seen anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been exploring different ways to try to bring older content back to the surface. And part of that, part of the restructuring that I've gone through has really been over a period of time just thinking about how a reader reads a blog, how a reader would want to read a blog. Now, if I'm an average reader, I want to see what the conversations are all the time. You know, if somebody comments on something a year old, well, I'd like the chance to respond. I'd like the chance to see what was said and respond. And nine chances out of ten, if it's a standard blog architecture, that's not going to be seen. So what I did was I started talking to some people who I really respect when it comes to blog architecture, blog design, driving traffic, all of those sorts of things. I started talking to them and asking them, what do you think about some ideas I had? And gathered some feedback on that. Basically, what came after several weeks of working was I have a blog now with three separate views of the same exact content. Which is sort of novel. I haven't seen too much of it, if anything. You have your standard view, which is, you know, reverse chronological. The most recent post is at the top. That's standard. 99% of all blogs out there are like that. That's what people are familiar with, so I wanted to leave it there. The second and the most innovative view that I put up was a conversation view. So it actually acts more like a forum, where when somebody comments on a post, that post, no matter how old it is, no matter when it was written, kicks up to the top of the list, and everything is listed reversed by the last comments, if you follow me. And so I found that was very useful in tracking old content. You know, as somebody would find something from a year ago and leave a comment on it, I would get the email notification, but nobody else would know about it. And so now those posts are at the top of the list, and it keeps the conversation fresh. So, and then the third view is really more for you know, people coming and wanting to get a overview of the kind of stuff I've written. It's a best of, you know, techno seller sort of page. That's just hand selected content that I wanted to make sure people had a chance to read. So that's really the thinking, and I know there's probably tons of other ideas once people can start thinking outside the box of what a normal blog should look like. There's tons of other things that people could do. I just wanted to present a few different ideas and try to get the debate going and conversation going and get people thinking for their own blogs. How can I better expose my readers, my current readers, to stuff that maybe they wouldn't have seen otherwise? That makes sense?
Well, mate, it does, but, and I hate to burst your bubble, but I don't think it's entirely revolutionary. I mean, I've been doing that on the G'day World site and blog for 12 months. I mean, if you go to g'dayworld.thepodcastnetwork.com, you'll see that, you know, the blog is in the, you know, traditional reverse chronological format. But down the right-hand side in my modules there, you'll see last five shows, last five comments.
Oh, sure.
Last five comments. Which does the same thing. You know, it pulls up, it shows you the last comments that anyone's made on any old post with a link to the post itself. So, you know, it accomplishes the same thing. It's maybe not as neat as your setup, because I guess you can't scroll through all of those posts, but it still brings those to the surface.
Well,
I've got the top five episodes links down the side too, which is sort of your best of. That's my, what I consider the top shows that we've done. So, same sort of thing, bringing it all to the surface. I agree with you that we need to, blogs could be a lot better configured.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I've been doing recent comments also for a long time, but I just felt there was a limitation in that people, it almost becomes, because a lot of people have that, it almost becomes like white noise on the side of the blog. You know, people don't necessarily look there as opposed to looking at a blog in a way that is sort of routine because it's the content scrolling, you got your posts listed, et cetera, et cetera, but it is different in that it keeps the conversation fresh. So I think we're saying the same thing. And you're right. I mean, it's not completely revolutionary, but I don't know that it was intended to be completely revolutionary so much as to get people talking. And I think I've accomplished that.
So you were link baiting, basically, is what you say.
Oh, come on!
I'm jagging you, man. You work with Jeremy, who's and Duncan, who are two of the best link baiters going. So that's fine.
I'm not trying.
now you run your blog on WordPress, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So was this the way that you did this? Was there simple tools or plugins for WordPress that enabled you to accomplish this, or did it take a lot of behind the scenes coding?
It took a lot of custom coding behind the scenes, particularly for the conversation view. I don't know how far I want to get into the technical aspect of it, but I had to really massage the WordPress loop pretty good to get it to work, and it took me, quite frankly, about two weeks to really get it to a point where I was happy with it. And it was hard. It was the most challenging thing I've ever pulled off with WordPress.
And is the code in a way now where you can release it as a plugin for the rest of us using WordPress so we can do the same thing? Are you going to share the love?
I could, and I'm thinking about it, but I have not decided as to whether I want to do that yet. I want to really see if it's really working the way I anticipated for a couple weeks before I decide on that. You know, it's still really fresh, and I don't know that I've run into all the different scenarios that could throw a bug into it. So, we'll see. I have a number of people asking me for it.
Well, yeah, and I guess it's, it's sort of part of the open source nature of WordPress that people tend to write cool stuff and share it with everyone else, don't they?
Yeah, well, and the best stuff is really, that's all built in WordPress stuff. That's, I've taken the stuff that I want people to be able to read and get an overview, and I've just assigned it a category, and then on that page I just show that category.
Right.
That's nothing new.
Yep.
And then the standard WordPress stuff, that's, I didn't have to do anything with that. There's nothing new there. So it was really the conversation that really was a doozy. It was difficult to get done, but I got it done, so I was happy about that.
Well, the fact that you've got so much response out of it, do you think that's a good indication that there's a large segment of people that aren't completely happy with the way that blogs are structured, and that it's time for a revolution in the way that we display information on blogs? Do you think that's in the winds?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's something I've been hearing pretty with it, more on the advanced side of things. With some really professional bloggers and people who've been working with this stuff for a long time, that really is where blogging needs to go. Is that, it's like Windows comes with so much of Microsoft stuff built right on the desktop that the argument in the instant messenger wars and whatnot is that nobody's going to use these other ones because Microsoft has already included their stuff. Well, it's sort of the same thing with blogs, is that, blogs are built according to a very stereotypical way, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not knocking it in any way, but no, very few people, the long tail, if you will, does not think in terms of changing things. It's just that's how blogs are, and that's fine for many people, but as you get more content and as you get more stuff, and if you've been in this business for years now, it builds up and it gets to the point where you really have to rethink how you present stuff and how you keep stuff moving. And I think there is a move to sort of change some of that. I don't know that it's going to happen tomorrow. I think it's going to take a lot of talk about it and a lot more people other than myself demonstrating alternate ways to present content. It's not going to happen quickly because it's a very ingrained way of doing things, and it's not necessarily bad. I just think it needs some improvement.
Hmm. because a lot of these issues that you rightfully raise up, you know, when people come into my blog, and you know, I guess podcasting has some additional issues from a show perspective. People come in today and you start listening to episode 147 of G'day World that we put up last night, or this one, which is 148, and you know, you lose a certain sense of perspective about who these people are and what's going on. It would be very useful sometimes to be able to plug people into the best kind of the cream of the content when they first come to the site. So you're right.
Well, what I'd really like to see, and what I'm really going to try to do, but I didn't think it would work, at least not in my situation, was I would really like to see some blogs, not all blogs, but some blogs, some really content-heavy blogs, really take more like a Dig or a Reddit approach, where the popular stuff, really, where the really great stuff rises to the top on a democratic base, you know? I don't know how possible that is, and that's something that I'm thinking about, but it works for content with Dig and Reddit and those types of sites, but when it comes to a blog, it's very different. I don't know how much it would work, but I'd like to see that kind of aspect to blog architecture.
Yeah, I'd like to see it as an option, perhaps. I don't know that, you know, when I go to read somebody's blog, I typically want to see what's been on their mind lately. I don't really care what everyone else thinks about what they're writing. I mean, I'm going to read somebody's blog because I like this person and like the way they think. I don't really give a shit about how many other people are reading it or what other people think, you know.
Well, let's take Darren Rouse, for instance. You know, he's got a great blog. It's not a personal blog, although I think he calls it that. Pro blogger. He's got all kinds of content and all kinds of stuff that would just lend itself to a rating type system. You know what I mean? And especially since, you know, he's told his story so many times about how he started and he's been learning all along and growing with his learning, that maybe some of his older stuff just doesn't really accurately portray how he thinks today, or what. I don't know really what I'm saying there. I'm just throwing it out that some more content oriented blogs would benefit from that kind of approach, as opposed to, you're right, like a personal blog or one that is, you know, maybe not so content rich, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, pro blogger is a bit of a different kind of a thing. I mean, it's full of, you know, expert information on Darren's topic of choice. So, but yeah, I think you're definitely right that we need to have different ways that we view certain blogs, and we need to take all of this rich information that's being buried in our blog archives and make them more accessible to people coming in through the front door. Obviously, you know, a lot of it is, it's all accessible via Google, and that's where a lot of people are starting to come from. But you know, to have that more accessible through the front door is something we all need to think more about.
Having plenty of avenues of exploration is huge.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's really one of the things, one of the ground rules that I gave myself when setting about doing my redevelopment, was I want to give people as many different options as possible to explore this blog. And you know, I mean, I'm sure I could have done some things better, and we'll see how it all plays out in the end. But you're absolutely right.
Aaron Brazell, technosailor.com. Thanks,
Cam.
Coming on late in the evening, Baltimore time, for a little bit of a chat. I'll let you go have your dinner, mate.
I don't know what that was. All right. I heard some noise. I was like, what is that? Yeah, thanks, Cam. This was great. I appreciate you taking the time to do this as well. Early morning, your time, I guess. I'm going to go get some dinner now.
I'm going to go get some coffee. Good on you, mate. Have a good one. See ya.
Take it easy.
So, moto fac, just do it, in Latin.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Karen Armstrong saying avatars.
Avatars squeezed into their little jars.
Yeah.
And back to your Karen Armstrong.
Did she talk about Zoroastrianism?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
This is excellent.
And how the Jesus story is just rip-off?
No, you rip-off. Nothing.
It is. It's a rip-off of Zoroastrianism.
Well, you were going to accept the book wholly, or were you going to chop bits out of it?
Zarathustra was the first monotheist.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with? You see, you're all... you're generous.
And the three wise men I read... Does she talk about the three wise men? Oh, the Zarathustrians.
Of course they are.
Because there had been a prophecy in Zoroastrianism that the Messiah would come.
And you're Judah.
And there'd be a star.
Look, if you read
But I think the Jews stole their religion off the Zarathustrians.
Okay, look,
because when the Jews were in... No, this isn't a dig. They learnt it. Because the Zoroastrians captured Babylon when the Jews were imprisoned in Babylon. And they think that's where the Jews got their whole monotheistic thing from.
People, you keep making that
I read it in Wikipedia.
You entertain yourselves by making these things up. Go on.
Anyway, so we've got the...
That's where Second Life comes from. The other ones are, you know, 3, 4, 5 and 6.
The Father Bob Show on the Podcast Network. Take one 72-year-old Catholic priest, a 35-year-old Aussie piss-taker, and stir fatherbob.thepodcastnetwork.com.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with? You see, you're all...